Well, as I indicated earlier, the text that we have this morning is from the book of Proverbs, chapter 21, and in verse 2. The text is verse 2. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. There's a lovely little spot in Ayrshire in the southwest corner of Scotland. Beautiful part of the country. And this place is called Electric Bray. It's not very, well, half of it is pretty and the other half isn't pretty. But it's a very interesting spot, and some of you may have heard of it. Some of you indeed may have been there. We went there a few years ago. We were taken there by some people with whom we were staying on holiday. Now, the remarkable thing, the amazing thing, apparently, about Electric Bray is that there's a hill there, there's a slope, an incline there. And if you go along, and you're driving your car along, and if you stop, and you shouldn't do this, but if you do stop and not put your brake on, the car will keep on going. It'll roll. Well, of course, you say, it'll roll. It's on a hill. It's on a slope. Yes, but in Electric Bray, the car runs uphill. Come on, that can't be right. So you get out of your car and you've got maybe a bottle of water or something with you, and you think, did that really happen? And you put the water on the floor, you drop some on the floor, and sure enough, the water goes wrong with the car, goes uphill. And you're still not persuaded, so you put the bottle down, or if you've got a child's ball in the car, you put the ball on the road, and the same thing happens again. It's incredible. It rolls uphill. Now, I saw this happening. And just before, while I was preparing this sermon, I thought, I'll go on YouTube. YouTube, very, very good, YouTube. I'm a great fan of YouTube. Not always for the right reasons, but there we are. And I went on YouTube, Electric Bray. You Google it when you go home, Electric Bray. And you'll see something like this. You'll see some men outside the car. They've stopped on Electric Bray, and they're pushing the car. But they're pushing it downhill. Now, you know, and I know, that can't happen. Electric Bray isn't the only place in the world where the law of gravity is suspended. It doesn't happen. What's happening? Well, you all know. It's an optical illusion. It looks as though things are going uphill. That's the way it seems to you. But you know, it isn't happening. It's really, these things are going downhill, but they appear to be going uphill. An optical illusion. And that really is what we have, I suppose, in the first part of our text this morning. Every way of a man is right, and you notice, is. If you've got your Bibles, it's in italics, meaning it's not there. Every man of a way is right in his own eyes. That means it seems right to him. And this is true for every one of us here this morning. All our ways are right in our own eyes. Otherwise, they wouldn't be our ways. Otherwise, we wouldn't do them. Otherwise, we wouldn't be persuaded by them. We do them because we think that this is the right way. In other words, our ways seem right to us. They appear to be right to us. And you can apply that in every realm, in whatever subject you're thinking. If you've got an opinion, if you've got an opinion, for you, that is what is right in your own eyes. Barack Obama thinks he's right. But Mitt Romney thinks he's right. David Cameron thinks he's right. Ed Miliband thinks, no, he's right. Nick Clegg, well, he doesn't know what he thinks. It depends when you ask him. Could be right, could be wrong. But All the ways of a man are right in his own eyes. We all think in a certain way, and we are convinced, of course we are convinced, that our way is the right way. Now, our verse here this evening, this morning, sets before us that principle. And obviously, the reason why we are here this morning is because we think about God. That's putting it very, very basically. But at least we can say this. Everybody here this morning thinks about God. And what about our thoughts about God? What do we think about God? Well, what you think about God is right in your own eyes. It's the manner in which we approach the subject of God. And so I could go to every seat here this morning and say, what do you think about God? You could give me, mostly you'd give me the same answer, but you could give me 50 answers if I asked the right questions. And you'd all say, no, I'm right. I have discussion, debates, arguments with others. And I'm right. No, he's right. Every way is right in his own eyes. Even the ways in which we think about God and the ways in which we want to please him. You think that your way of pleasing God is the right way. Now, I want to suggest to you this morning that there are three types of thinking, if I can put it that way. Three kinds of thinking about God. And I want to deal with each one of those ways, the ways in which certain kinds of people think about God. And the first is the way of the atheist. Now, it doesn't look to me that there are many atheists here this morning, but I still want to speak and to bring before you the way in which the atheist thinks about God. Obviously, what he says is there is no God. And if you read about atheism and discuss this with different people and listen to certain debates, you'll find that the atheists really have got two arguments. The first is the argument of what I call suffering. The argument of suffering. And what the atheists would tell you is this: how can you possibly believe in God? How can you believe in God? Especially a good God. With earthquakes, with tsunamis, with wars, with famines, with babies being born with disabilities and handicapped, with millions of children starving. How can you believe in God? How can you believe in a good God? The God you believe in, either he is good but can't do anything about the world, or he can do what he wants about the world, but chooses not to, and therefore is a cruel God and a harsh God. That's the atheist argument. That's one of the ways in which he reasons, and which he tries to bring you into a corner. And very often does that. We've all been there. We've all been there. We've been in a situation where we really can't give answers that will please and satisfy and bring contentment to the atheist. So that's one argument he's got. The argument of suffering, and we're hard put to it, very hard put to it, to try to counter that argument. The other argument that the atheist has is, I suggest, the argument from science. He's got suffering on his side, and he thinks he's got science on his side. So he comes along and says, well, you know, today science has disproved God. Not really, I suppose. It's a bit more sophisticated than that. But I guess that's the way which ordinary people think today, isn't it? Science disproved God. Evolution and Darwin and all that, that's the final nail in the coffin of religion and Christianity. The nail may be a long time being driven in, but it's there. And the science, scientific argument and so on has shown that. People used to speak, maybe they still do, I don't know, but they used to speak about a God of the gaps. And the God of the gaps theory worked along these lines. God was responsible, science could explain everything. And you saw some things and you had an answer for it. But then there was something and you couldn't really explain it. And if you were a religious man or a Christian, you'd say, oh yeah, we can't explain that, but God does that. And the atheist would look at you smilingly and say, ah, come on. You've got a God who just fits in conveniently where you want him. And you've got a God of the gaps. Now, years ago, there were many, many of these gaps. Because science couldn't explain everything. But now science, apparently, can explain most things, probably just about everything. And so the number of gaps is getting smaller. And that's why, outside, God is getting smaller to people. They don't need him. Science can explain everything. Science comes in and provides the answer. And best of all, of course, science doesn't make any demands upon us, does it? Doesn't ask for anything in return. Doesn't ask you for sacrifice. Doesn't ask you to do certain things that are important and necessary for its furtherance. And so we've got people today, the great and the good, this is how they go on, isn't it? This is how they reason. You find a man like Jeremy Paxman, I don't know whether he's a scientist or not, but he says, this, the Old Testament, you know, it really is hogwash. You may have seen him on Newsnight. The Old Testament is hogwash. And people who believe in the Old Testament, and people who are Christians, they are stupid. That's Jeremy Paxman. He was very careful, mind you. He was very careful, it seems to me, that when he used words like hogwash and stupid, he was talking to Richard Dawkins. Well, he wasn't going to have much opposition from there, was he? That's the kind of bravery that some of these men exhibit. That's the kind of courage they muster up. There was a man called Nietzsche a few years ago, 100 years ago or so, more than that. And Nietzsche was a bad man. He really was a bad lot. And he was opposed to everything that you and I hold dear. Everything. He thought Christianity was the worst thing that had ever happened. The worst thing. And the sooner we got rid of Christianity, and let's talk about Jesus of Nazareth, the sooner we got rid of that, the better. Because Christianity is weakness, and meek, and turn the other cheek, and give in to your neighbours, and forgive, and so on. No, no, said Nietzsche. Nietzsche is being a kind of Superman. Nietzsche, human beings are called upon to stand upon their own feet. And Nietzsche was largely behind the teaching of the Nazis. It's that kind of doctrine, that kind of teaching that says, you know, you could be powerful if you're going to do anything in this world and forget all this rubbish about worshipping God and following a carpenter and so on. And Nietzsche was a man who coined the phrase, maybe you're all familiar with it, the phrase is God is dead. 50 or so years ago, it was there. God is dead. He made the cover on Time magazine on one occasion. God is dead. And we don't need to attend to God any longer. Well, John Blanchard in his book on Does God Believe in Atheists gives the illustration of, it's an actual thing that happened. A subway in New York. And someone had written on the subway wall, God is dead. And underneath, he'd written Nietzsche. Nietzsche was the one who said this, you see. God is dead, Nietzsche. And Blanchard said somebody else had come along and had written alongside it, Nietzsche is dead, signed God. Not a bad answer, that is it. Not a bad answer at all. You can go out this morning to Credech, and I'm not patronizing or doing the people of Credech down at all. I doubt if you could find 6 people who would have heard of Nietzsche. But everybody's heard about God. Everybody's heard about God. Nietzsche? Who's Nietzsche? Who does he play for? That'd be the kind of answer you'd get. But God, everybody knows about God. Whether they believe in him or not is irrelevant. But he's certainly not dead. You can go to Nietzsche's grave. You can't go to God's grave. So here is the atheist. You can't convince him. Listen, his ways are right in his own eyes. He's absolutely convinced. And you're not going to change him, of course, by any argument. Well, that's one, that's the atheist. Then you've got people who come along and they are indifferent, really, as far as religion and as far as God is concerned. And their way of thinking is right. They think, well, my way, you know, I'm indifferent, I can take it or leave it. Doesn't really matter. That, they say, is the right way. Doesn't matter to this man one way or the other. He is the man who lives next door to you. He's the man you meet in the street. He's your neighbor. He's the person you say good morning to every day. Not at all troubled. Not at all bothered. Utterly and completely indifferent to religion and to God. Swansea full of them. Absolutely. There are many, many evangelical churches in Swansea, aren't there? Very many. Not one of them is full. They've all worked on ministry. Not one of them is full. And there are thousands in the streets of Swansea, and they're not at all concerned about this God. It's got nothing to do with them. That's their way of thinking. They're right. They're right. In their own eyes. You ask them to come to church. Maybe you ask your neighbours to come to church one Sunday. And, I'll come one Sunday. Don't give up on me. Keep asking me. I'll come one Sunday. I'll come one Sunday. When I've got a free day. Come to church on Sunday. Well, you know, Sunday's such an awkward day, isn't it? It's the one day off I get in the week. And really, I shouldn't be wasting it going to church. Come to church on Sunday. Well, Auntie Maggie always comes on Sundays. And, you know, I always meet up with my brother on a Sunday. So, if it was another day... Come to church this week, this Sunday. Well, I've got something on this week. Come to church this Sunday. Well, so-and-so's playing on Sunday. So-and-so's playing on Sunday. And I can't miss that. Come to church on Sunday. Well, if they're honest, they'll probably come out and say, well, you know, I'm not religious, really. Don't ask me again. Don't bother with me. I'm not really a religious person. They're utterly and absolutely indifferent. Now, may I suggest to you, dear friends, very gently, that you may have something in common with these people in not taking God seriously. I'm not questioning whether you believe in God or not. I'm asking you simply this. Do you seriously believe in him? Do you take him seriously? It's a very serious business, you know. Nobody's going to disagree with me this morning, I know. It is a very, very serious business. And someday, one day, you are going to have to take God seriously. You are. Maybe you can go through life and say, yes, I believe in God and so on. And, you know, it's all right in this place. And he doesn't bother me and I don't bother him. One day you are going to have to take him seriously. We all of us have to give an account to God. Do we take him seriously? When Hudson Taylor was converted, people had a particular language. I suppose we've got the kind of language these days. If someone became a Christian in Hudson Taylor's day, I think it was in his biography I read this, they would say about a man who became a Christian, they would say, he's become serious. That's good, isn't it? When you became a Christian, did you become serious? Not did you become miserable. Not did you stop laughing. Not did you go around with sackcloth and ashes on you. Did you become serious about God? Have you come to him seriously? And let me say this. You cannot come to God too soon. But hear me well. You can come to him too late. You can't come too soon, but you can come too late. So here's the indifferent. The way seems right in their own eyes. They're different from the atheist, yes, but they're both absolutely convinced that they are right. And then the third group is the religious. These are the people who go through the routine. They're the people, we read about them in the next verse, to do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. There were people who thought that sacrifice was the most important thing. The Old Testament never, never says yes and amen to that. But there are these religious people. They go through the routine. They go through the ritual. They do their best. Or rather, it's not so much a case of not doing their best. It's a case of not doing bad. People whose religion, Thomas Watson, the Puritan, said, their religion runs on negatives. It's not what they do. It's what they don't do. And they boast is all upon what they don't do. A few months ago, we did a little course here. Some of you attended it on the teaching of Jesus in some the miracles and parables. And one of the parables that we dealt with, very important parable, very well known parable, was the parable, of course, of the prodigal son. And you remember the prodigal son went away and then came back in rags and smelly and so on. And his father welcomed him, kissed him and made a great feast for him. And the older brother came in. And the older brother said, what's this? What's going on here? What's happened? And the father said, great news. Great news. Your brother's come back. My brother? You mean all this is for my brother? You mean all this fuss is for that stinking waster? He's my son. He's my son. He's your brother. And the elder brother said, I'm not going in. You enjoy your party. Don't expect me to go in. You know what he did? Took the cash and ran. I stayed here. I worked for you. I spent myself for you. I did everything I could for you. And you never did that much for me. The older brother was saying to the father, listen, don't I deserve something? He deserves nothing. Surely what I did counts for something. You owe me, he said to his father. Dear friends, let me ask you this morning, are you coming before God and saying, God, you owe me? Oh, I hope not. I hope not. You owe me. What does he owe us? We did another parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector going up to prayer.
And the Pharisee, well, look at what I do, and look at what I don't do. I fast, and I'm not like these people, and I don't commit adultery, and I'm not like this guy here, standing in the back, that I nothing at all to do with him, nothing at all between us. And the publican just cried out, the tax collector just cried, God, please be merciful to me. Be merciful. I've got nothing to give you. You don't owe me a thing. You don't owe me a thing. Just have mercy on me, that's all. You know what the Pharisee was doing? He was doing exactly the same as the older brother. God, you owe me. You look at your books. You go back and see your journal. Check up on your diary, God. Remember what I did then? Remember so-and-so, how I helped him? Remember how much I gave to this cause? God, let me just very humbly remind you of how I put you in my debt. God, you owe me. The elder brother thought he was being very, very reasonable. And he was, wasn't he? He was. He couldn't argue with what he'd said. The Pharisee, pretty reasonable to me. He did give tithes. He did fast. He didn't commit adultery. He didn't do any of these things. Tax gatherer was a traitor. The lowest of the low. But God doesn't deal in that way. Here are men whose thinking is right in their own eyes. I close with this. You notice I haven't dealt with the second part of the verse, and that will take a long, long time. But the Lord weighs the hearts. The ways of a man, the things he does, how he chooses to conduct his life. The way of a man is right in his own eyes. But the Lord weighs, not our ways, our hearts. God's concerned with your heart and my heart. Oh, strip away every work that we've done. Everything that we could possibly bring before him is put to one side. And God is concerned with our naked hearts. Unadorned. Nothing to make them appear sophisticated. Nothing smart, clever, beautiful, lovely about them. Naked hearts. And the Lord weighs the heart. And there's no seam here, is there? Every way of a man seems right in his own eyes. But the Lord seems to weigh. No, 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 no. The Lord weighs the hearts. And your hearts and my heart, they're incredibly light in the sight of God, you know. They don't weigh a feather. They really don't. What is it that counts with God? The only weight that God recognizes is the weight and the worth and the value and the merit of the death of Jesus Christ. That is it. That and nothing else. That and no more. Are your ways right in your own eyes? They can go out of here this morning and say, well, my way is the right way. I plead with you, dear friends. Don't just go out in that way. Don't go out in that way. Think you may be wrong. Oliver Cromwell once said on one occasion, a man was doing what he thought was right. And Cromwell said to him, think it possible, in the bowels of Christ I beseech you, think it possible. You may be mistaken. all the ways of a man are right in his own ways. Your way, your way, your way, your way, my way. Right in our own ways. But the Lord weighs the hearts. May he weigh them well. And may he not find them wanting for his name's sake. Amen.